Okay, well, as Debbie has told you my title, I'll tell you again and again. This is my outline. Translation problem. So, when I started thinking about this, I didn't really know anything about reference frames or continuous variables. But I knew a fair amount about teleportation and controversy. So I'm going to try to speak authoritatively on these topics. But please jump right in when I, you know, insult you or embarrass people in the audience.
What about quantum?
I don't see anybody know anything about quantum. But teleportation doesn't mean much without quantum, so I guess that's okay. So the first thing I have to do to talk about this is recap a little bit what continuous variable teleportation quantum is about, because I didn't understand it when I started, like I said. So hopefully I can give you a brief idea for those of you who don't already know it. So the first thing you have to do is learn to think in terms of coherent states of lasers. So this is a picture of an X and P quadrature basis for the coherent states. The vacuum state is right here, and all the coherent states are represented by just sort of Gaussian blurred circles displaced by a certain amount of alpha, which is the, as a complex number, is an amplitude in the phase, or the magnitude of it is an amplitude. Am I not being heard? That was close. Okay. And the angle is what is called the phase of the coherent state. And that, the other kinds of states you'll see are squeeze states, which is where you take a coherent state and squeeze one of the axes as much as possible. But then the other axis has to expand to take care of the uncertainty relation. And then there are EPR pairs. This is no longer really a picture of a pure state like those are, but half of an entangled state, which doesn't really have a definite X orbit. And the other important kind of states are, so tell me about this. The number states, which are represented by a big circle that cuts through a coherent state at its expectation value of the number of particles in it, but it's a circle that has no well-defined phase, or X or P. I also show on the same graph two different coherent states to try to indicate that they are not orthogonal to one another, although they do form a complete basis for the space. It's just that it's overcomplete. So the continuous variable teleportation setup looks like this. So what happens is Alice has a qubit, or that coherent state that she'd like to teleport, and it's combined at a beam splitter with half of an EPR. The EPR pair is generated by sending in a squeeze state in the X direction and a P squeeze state to a 50-50 beam splitter, and what comes out is a state that I didn't write down, probably can't on this piece of paper with this pen. Yeah, it's not going to work. I'll write it down on this piece of paper with this pen. So this is what the blue thing. You don't need to see this for long. The point is that the two mode squeeze state has the X's are perfectly correlated and the P's are perfectly correlated, but neither one of them has a definite value. If we go back to this, we can actually look at something. So this state here that has no definite value is combined on a beam splitter, and heterodyne measurements are done, resulting in classical values of X and P, which are continuous numbers, which are then set to Bob, who does a displacement operator indexed by the X and P, which is supposed to recreate the state psi here,
And Victor, who originally gave them the stateside, checks to see if it is what he expected and determines whether teleportation has been done successfully. And these funny little things here are local oscillators that they each have. So a little bit more intuitive understanding of why this works, because I couldn't quite understand why this did teleportation even in a continuous sense. An intuitive idea is that because this beam has no x or p, when it's added onto this beam, this measurement tells you nothing about x or p, which sounds like it doesn't do anything. But of course, that's exactly what you want to do in teleportation, is not disturb the state by finding out about it. So I've conjectured, and probably somebody's already proved this, what I call the universal teleportation theorem, which basically exists to keep me from having to think about why continuous variable teleportation is teleportation. And what it says is that if I take some unknown state psi, and I measure it combined with some other part of a larger state, and do a POVM with all the rank one elements, so it's a complete measurement, resulting in the outcome I, provided that I has no information whatsoever about psi, then there should always exist a unitary transformation indexed by I that restores this state to being precisely psi. So if anybody knows a counterexample or a proof, it would be handy, because it's got to be true. Somebody say something about it, or just grunting. But anyway, that's my intuitive understanding of why this whole thing is properly called teleportation. But of course,
you think that these probably the dimensions.
Yeah, okay, the dimensions have to be the right matched up size, or it definitely won't work. I agree. So of course, the real case is considerably uglier. All these things that I had before as just states and paradigm measurements and things depend on actually being created somehow. So these squeeze states are created by hitting an optical parametric amplifier spelled with an O. What does that stand for? Objects?
Oscillator.
Oscillator, thank you. with two beams of laser light. There's supposed to be a mirror here that isn't drawn. Anywhere the light beam bends, imagine there's a mirror that it doesn't, if I have left it off. Alice and Bob's paradigm measurements no longer have local oscillators. They're all just getting light off this pump laser. Pump's not the right thing. The main laser for the entire system. And Victor's harmonic paradigm measurement also shares that laser. So this laser is going all over the place. And this is the source of much of the controversy, although not quite all. All right, so the controversy revolves around something called the partition ensemble fallacy.
So, John, before you do that, do you agree that that sign that you showed there, that sort of face of the Scanton diagram in the previous picture?
Yes, I will put it back.
Do you agree that the teleportation could be just as well performed, or Victor could test it just as well by putting that phase shifter instead, just before he tests what comes out of the oscillator, in his local oscillator, and vary that beam there as opposed to anything that's going into
Well, yes and no. I'll say yes, but hopefully I'll be able to explain what I mean before I'm finished. But I guess the short answer would be yes, but not if you're using a coherent state, only if you're using a mixed state of the kind that, well, I'm coming to. I'll keep this around too. All right, so this partition ensemble fallacy that has been brought up is the idea that if we have a density matrix, there are many ways of mathematically decomposing it into an ensemble. One way is that this density matrix row came in and it was some mixture of spin-ups and spin-downs, and we just don't know which one we have. And if we use a Stern-Gerlach apparatus to separate the spin-up from the spin-down, we get a click at a detector here. And it was, can say, it was as if we just had a mixture of spin-up and spin-down, and it happened to be spin-up. But that's obviously an incorrect retrodiction in the sense of, well, what if somebody had actually made a spin left or a spin right? If the density matrix rho is the identity, then this is an equally valid decomposition of it. And I put it through a Stern-Gerlach apparatus, and it still might happen I get a click in this detector. But if I were to make this retrodiction, that the spin had really just been up all along, and I hadn't known it until I did the measurement, I would be wrong. And if I was trying to do quantum cryptography and I'm an eavesdropper making this sort of retrodiction, it would be as if I got caught, because I would get caught. So incorrectly retrodicting a particular ensemble used to make a density matrix is what is known as the partition ensemble fallacy. One question I have is it's sometimes called the preferred ensemble fallacy, which is probably a better name. I'm not quite sure where the other one got started, possibly with my own inability to read. The math. Decide I need to go back and check on that. So how does this come up in the laser teleportation situation? Well, of course it comes up, as we've heard more than once during this conference, that real lasers don't make coherent states. What they make is mixtures over all possible phases of the coherent state. And this is a state that can be decomposed by different ensembles, and one of which is a mixture of just number states. And therefore, the argument goes that we should never have retrodicted in this teleportation experiment that we really had a coherent state all along and we just didn't know what it was. Because you might equally well say we really had a number state all along and we didn't know what it was. And neither of those statements is truly valid. Well, this is a picture of sort of iconically why this is what the coherent state looks like. When from a real laser. It's not a coherent state, it's a mixture of all different coherent states around the circle, and it should be blurred out completely. It's fairly easy to see that this is also decomposable as a mixture of number states, because that would just be rings and smear them out concentrically to fill up the same sort of area. That's sort of the graphical reason for this identity. So, what is the resolution? Well, in my view, let's see if I can arrange the. This is all comes down to whether you believe quantum mechanics or not. So I'm going to do the striptease here because I know that's bad form, but I don't have PowerPoint running, so I will. So I agree that we cannot retrodict what really happened and say that really in this laser teleportation experiment we had a phase. But what we can do is predict what would happen. I'm just going to read this. If a particular ensemble is used, provided only that we believe quantum mechanics. So let me try to say that in another way. Quantum mechanics says that we don't have to worry about which ensemble we really had. That was the whole point of this partition ensemble fallacy. That if anybody ever did come along and give us the ensemble we were talking about, then the thing is going to work just the same. So we've actually tested the teleporter to see whether it did teleportation, even though we were unable to actually test the teleporter to see whether it did teleportation. And this is a naughty thing to get your mind around, but I don't know how to say it better than that, except I'll try to discuss this with the rest of the talk. But the important difference is that if you believe quantum mechanics, you are definitely entitled to make these predictions. If you don't believe quantum mechanics, I'm not sure what you're doing building a teleportation experiment. But the difference is, and this is the important part, is that you might be doing an experiment to test quantum mechanics itself, which this teleportation apparatuses that have really been built don't do. On the other hand, why are you, I said that. On the other hand, if you already believe quantum mechanics, you might find yourself saying, well, why am I trying to do a teleportation experiment at all? Quantum mechanics says it's going to work. So this is a sort of a dangerous topic to get off on with any experimentalists around. Clearly, the point is you're testing your engineering prowess, not quantum mechanics itself. Well,
that's got to generate some controversy.
Oh, and I should mention also that I call this misapplication of the partition ensemble fallacy the partition ensemble fallacy type 2. Type 2 because there was already a paper called the partition ensemble fallacy, much, much grid, which is also wrong. But unfortunately, my point was not the partition ensemble fallacy, but rather a different fallacy. So, all right, so more specifically, there were several particular objections raised, and these are based on the three criteria, which I've called the BFS criteria for Bronstein, Fuchs, and Kimball. They had a paper spelling out these criteria, and Terry Rudolph and Sanders responded to each one, and some others that I haven't brought up here because I think they're less interesting. But so the first criteria says the states to be teleported. They should be supplied by some extra person, Victor. Alice and Bob should know nothing about the states being teleported. And that's a little fishy in the actual experimental apparatus as described, because this pump laser has been shared by everybody, so there's some correlation, especially in the number basis, between Victor and Alice and Bob. So that's bad, and it's not really very teleportation-like. Two resolutions to this. One is, you really should do the experiment again with Victor having a separate pump laser from Alice and Bob. And that, I don't think, as an experiment, is that hard. It might be expensive to have to buy two lasers instead of splitting a beam off of one of them. The other one is, if you take my view of what's being tested, you don't really need to, because there's no correlation in the phase basis, and I believe it's acceptable to look at things in the phase basis. The second criterion is that Alice and Bob should share only an entangled state and a classical channel. Now, again, so here, this is a... here's my picture of a teleportation. Alice and Bob have... focus. Refocusing every time I put weight on it. They have an EPR pair, and they talk classically, but they share nothing else. And in the real experiment, of course, they also share the pump laser. And the resolution to that is, I think everyone has agreed that they need to share the pump laser. That's essentially what we've been talking about all week. They have to share a reference frame to get anything done. And that the real experiment did not do that. And the correct procedure would be to, instead of sharing the pump laser during the teleportation, they should share it ahead of time, distribute the light, and then keep it around in some sort of local oscillator that's now correlated. And that's experimentally much more difficult, but in principle won't change anything that's happened. But you haven't really done teleportation until you've done it like that. And finally, the third criteria is that entanglement should be a verifiable resource in the protocol. And that one, I'm just not quite sure what the point of it is, but I'll try to talk about it a little. But before I do, well, I should talk about what I mean by Victor, who is the independent verifier, and what I mean by basis, which is more in the flavor of this conference anyway, and can be very confusing. So, this all on here at once? All right, so an aligned basis is when Alice and Bob have sitting on a tabletop, say, or widely separated. Okay. Hello? They have some macroscopic, physical, or even just mathematical, physical thing where it's just a line. Basis is exactly the same in both their labs. And if they have some sort of quantum channel which doesn't disturb quantum states, if somebody sends a spin from Alice to Bob, it comes through unscathed. So this is what I call happiness. On the other hand, if they start out with a basis that's tilted, but they still have the identity channel between them.
So they send a state psi, and it's still totally undisturbed by the time it appears for Bob. So Bob is here, and he lives in a tilted basis. And in his basis, he sees U times psi for some U in between the bases. And aligning bases consists of them talking somehow and exchanging qubits out of physical systems and trying to get the bases back to being in an aligned state. On the other hand, another way to think of basis alignment is that Alice and Bob, they have a basis already, but their communication channel is messed up by some unknown unitary rotation. So in this case, psi is mapped into U psi, and both Alice and Bob agree that in Bob's lab it's called U psi. And their goal consists of trying to find the tilted basis for Bob where he sees psi. And I'm calling this temporarily Speckin's descent alignment, because I've had long arguments, arguments with both of them about whether this should be called basis alignment. This is what's done, say, in quantum cryptography. You have a long fiber, and polarizations of photons going through the fiber get tilted. And so Bob is trying to align his apparatus to get reliable signal out, so that they agree that when Alice sends in a spin-off, what Bob gets out is a spin-off. But to me, in looking at this, this is really what I call misalignment. Because what they've actually done is they took their perfectly aligned bases and they tilted them. Now, this is not an important difference, really. It's just a mathematical, you know, it's like Heisenberg versus Schrodinger representation of things. And you have to be careful what you're talking about. So I'm always going to refer to Speckin's descent alignment as misalignment, or just not refer to it, and as my kind of alignment as alignment. But I think this distinction is easy to forget about, and then it gets very confusing if you don't just sort of pick one. That leads me to talk about Victor more carefully now, because Victor has its own aligned reference frame, both before and after the teleportation. And he's the one who decides if teleportation has really been done. He gets to settle the controversy. And it leads to three questions. First is, if Victor has pure coherent states, whatever that means, they're not smeared out, they're just circles in the phase-space plane. But Alice and Bob have to use these mixed coherent states. Can they still do teleportation successfully? And then the second part is, if Victor also has mixed states, can he tell whether or not they did teleportation successfully? And third, in the real experiment, Victor shares the reference beam with Alice and Bob, and it would still work if he actually did it right by having an independent laser that had nothing to do with Alice and Bob. What's going on? Thank you, Hillary. So I want to try to address these questions. I'll keep talking. So the answer to the first one is the teleportation will work, and I think most of the controversialists would agree, if Victor has pure coherent states. I don't really care whether Alice and Bob have mixed states or not. If Victor is satisfied that his state has been teleported successfully, it's really nobody else's business what Alice and Bob are doing.
Sorry. What do you mean when you say Alice and Bob have mixed states? Do you mean that they're...
They have the state integral over all phases.
But shared.
But shared. Yes, that's what I mean. But from Victor's point of view, they're completely mixed. Now, the reason this actually works, if Victor has pure coherent states, is because teleportation is supposed to work on an unknown input state. So it doesn't matter. Whatever viewpoint Alice and Bob have about their own rotation, they just see a different unknown state to themselves, and they don't have to know it for teleportation to work. And you can show mathematically, probably isn't worth wasting the time on, but you can go through and say, well, if it works in one basis, then it works in the integral over bases, provided Victor's state is coherent. If there's questions about that later, I can bring it back. Well, the other point about Victor being always right is this earlier question about entanglement as a verifiable resource.
I don't care about entanglement as a verifiable resource in teleportation. What I care about is that the teleportation worked from Richard's point of view. My understanding of where the entanglement came into the whole question is, well, first of all, everybody knows you actually need entanglement to do teleportation. And second of all, that mathematically checking for whether Alice and Bob have an entangled state is a good way to tell whether you've achieved better teleportation than you could. You could try to simulate teleportation with a classical method where Alice does some sort of complete measurement, sends classical information to Bob. They don't use entanglement at all when they try to reconstruct the state. And so the idea is that proving there was entanglement present is a way of checking to see if you beat the classical situation. But I don't think it's a fundamental necessity for teleportation to find out that there's really entanglement there. Okay. How am I doing on time?
You have 15 minutes.
Okay. Try to go quickly through these other two questions, and I'll tell you what they were. Second question was, if Victor also has mixed states, can you tell if Alice and Bob have really teleported a pure coherent state? And that was my original point all along, that because of the partition ensemble fallacy type 2, that they can't. What they know for sure is that if somebody else came along with a real coherent state, it would still work, because they can act not as if they had teleported a pure coherent state, if they didn't know which it was, but they can predict that that's what will happen. Well, in question three, which is Victor has his own independent laser, is kind of a combination of the answers to the first two questions. And the answer is, again, yes, the experiment should still work even if he has an independent laser. And to me, question three is really the acid test for whether you've done teleportation or not. Victor should have nothing to do with Alice and Bob. Even if he's in a mixed state, at least he should have nothing to do with Alice and Bob's lasers. And this test has not been done. And strangely, it is not addressed in detail in any of the papers discussing this controversy, except for Van Enck and Fuchs, who say oddly that it will work if Victor has an independent laser, provided he phase locks it to Alice and Bob's laser. Which, I mean, I thought Van Enck was going to be here. I really wanted to ask him exactly what they meant by that, because I mean, that seems like sort of a non-statement. And they say something like, well, Alice and Bob said they could teleport a quantum state, but they didn't say what mode it, I mean, Victor doesn't get to pick what mode it's in. But phase locking the phase isn't mode locking the mode. And I think they said this confusing thing in response to the question I had for them. When they first wrote their paper, I talked to them in Japan and asked them specifically, will it work with Victor with an independent laser or not? And they said, no, it won't work. And I got home from Japan, and the thing was posted on Quantviz, and it says, yes, it will work. And the rest of the paper was exactly the same. So the issue was a little confusing. And I think the experiment should be done if anyone wants to claim to have really done continuous variable teleportation. All right, so what was the response to Terry and Sanders from Van Enck and Fuchs? Well, their point is that the state of a propagating laser is not a state where you integrate over the phase of all these unknown phases and then take the nth power on the right. It's the state on the left, which is n copies of the unknown phase. And what that means is you could measure the phase. You could peel off some of the laser light and measure the phase in there. And then the phase basis becomes a sort of preferred basis. The one possible problem is that there might be some other state that's the same kind of integral, with the omegas, which are not coherent states. There's something else inside the parentheses, but it's of the same form, but for some other basis. And what they show mathematically, because of the quantum Fermi theorem, that the only decomposition in this form is the coherent state basis for a propagating laser. And because of this, they say, well, the coherent state basis is deferred, and therefore we can do all our computations in it, and everything's happy. There's no partition ensemble fallacy to worry about. And the response from Rudolph and Sanders was, well, that's all very nice and good that it's a little bit preferred, but it's not preferred in any fundamental sense, and it's not satisfactory. Was that a fair description of your response, Terry?
It's a comment on their paper. It's on the URL. For me, it's only on the archive. I don't know.
That's possible. Well, anyway, basically the idea is that the phase-phase basis is very nice because of the DeFinetti theorem, but it's still nothing fundamental. And worse, this measurement that you could do in order to collapse into a particular phase by peeling off a little of the light and looking at just a piece of it is not a measurement that you can actually do anyway. So that doesn't really solve anything. So another way to resolve the thing was told to us by Yamato and Bronstein. And they say this sort of nice idea that the absolute phase is not observable. There's been some talk about that. I think we talked about this earlier in the conference. But it's something that, because of super selection rules, in some sense, it's not an observable. Therefore, the choice of a flat distribution in this integral is unwarranted. In fact, we should be able to choose any distribution we like, because we can't measure this distribution. So we might as well choose the distribution. So it's supposed to say phi equals 0, so that there's no integral, there's just a coherent state. And then there's no partition ensemble fallacy because pure states don't have multiple decompositions. The problem with this argument is that the distribution is measurable even though the absolute phase is not. And what you do, well, there's a laser coming in separate from laser one from off the screen. And the idea is if I take two lasers and I turn them on, they each have this flat distribution. And what you find if you measure the interference pattern is a flat distribution. And you can back calculate by deconvolving that what the original distribution must be and determine that the phase was completely random in each laser. So just because the absolute phase isn't measurable doesn't mean the distribution isn't measurable.
For a short time, you have a well-defined phase.
For a short time, you can have a well-defined phase between the two lasers. But each time I turn off the lasers and turn them on again, I'll get a new phase, and that's the distribution that we're talking about.
No, but so when you said that the pulse from the future is like peel off a part of the laser and beat it up against another laser, and figure out the relative phase you can do it.
I agree, but then you'd say, well, I'm only beating it against another laser.
Yeah.
I'm not beating it against an absolute clock.
Well, sure, then your laser is ready.
All right, no, I agree that you can do that, but the point is that it doesn't matter. I don't think you need to worry about the lasers being mixed anyway, so I'm not concerned with it. But yes. And so finally, Howard Wiseman says something very similar to what they say, and also very similar to what I say, the more I think about it. But sometimes I think it's completely different. I spent a lot of time and a lot of beer wondering about this week, and I don't know if I did. The sum of the least question that is titled this paper sort of reminded me of this kind of question. Do you walk to school or you take a lunch? He says, what time is a laser? He doesn't actually say that, but he says, why is a laser not a, it's a clock and not a quantum channel. Nobody ever said it was a quantum channel, so yeah, that's an unfair persistent thing to say. I found it amusing. Well, the basic way he says is a clock, the laser is the best clock you can have, so you might as well do everything relative to it anyway. Define the phase as zero relative to itself and avoid the partition ensemble fallacy. To my eyes, this is committing again the same to the last slide, the partition ensemble fallacy of Bronstein and Yamato. Because again, the problem is whose laser is the one we get to call zero? We can't call two of them both zero. So you have to worry about Victor again. And Victor's laser is the one you should really call zero because of the fundamental principle that the customer is always right. Victor is the customer of Alice and Bob's teleporter. Um,
I was being unfair in my paper to Howard about something else, but I might as well bring it up because I drew this really ugly slide. he had a secondary point about that Alice and Bob share a reference frame laser. And like I said, most people agree that should be done before the experiment starts, but Howard showed that even if you do it during the experiment, it's really a classical channel, not a quantum channel, because you can synchronize clocks classically. I disagree with this partially in that you need to synchronize clocks physically, and a pure classical channel with just ones and zeros can't do it. However, it's a channel with no quantum capacity that can synchronize clocks. Anyway, he says that it's okay for this to happen during the experiment because I'm not actually using it in any way that's bad. I'm not sending quantum data over that channel, nor could I. And I say that that's not a valid logical argument, right? That if I claim to have built a teleportation experiment, I should actually not have an extra channel hanging around the whole time I'm doing it. So this is iconic for that. This is a claim to build some sort of radio that transmits from one tower to the other. And I also have soup cans connected by a string that go from one tower to the other. And now, I might be perfectly confident that I'm not going to use those to cheat and transmit data, but you know, why bother having them around? It's better to do the experiment without them there. All right, so I'm going to come back, I believe, to Terry's question that he asked earlier, which is also in the paper you don't remember writing. So he says, okay, Alice and Bob have something that purports to be teleportation, and Victor is out here testing. And so what he does is he puts in a phase shift here and then sends it through here. But because this is an integral over all different phases, Terry says, I guess with the centers, that you can put the phase shift in up here in the other direction. The distributions everywhere are the same, and how come this isn't testing teleportation too? But obviously it's not testing teleportation because you didn't vary anything before the teleportation happened. This is all after it happened. So I can't test teleportation by varying a phase after the teleportation is supposed to be done. Well, the reason this tests teleportation, if you're willing to commit the partition ensemble fallacy, is that if I call the laser phase here zero, is that each time I fire up Victor's and Alice and Bob's lasers, they get a new random phase relative to each other. And that's exactly what I need to test teleportation. I'm supposed to vary the phase here. Every time I fire up the experiment or wait longer than the coherence time, the phase varies. So that is why, that's the answer to your question. Do you buy that at all?
I didn't understand.
You're supposed to put different phases in here, and you're saying you're not because the phase shift is over here. But also, every time you start the experiment, you get a new random phase because that's the whole point of not having a real coherent state. So that...
I mean, I would just say, I think that that thing applying up there is a valid way of testing the teleportation. It's just the reason that it seems like, oh, the point should be before it goes into Alice, just because that's the story being told. Any actual operation test, teleportation seems to be. So...
Oh, I thought you were going to say it wasn't. All right. If you agree, I'm not going to argue anymore. Quit while I'm ahead. All right, so now we'll shift gears a little bit. Instead of talking about continuous variables, I want to talk about just good old American qubits. So, I wanted to do the strip to use, but I guess I won't. So for qubit teleportation, the analogous situation to the randomized phase is that Victor, Alice, and Bob all have random bases, and they don't know what they are, and they change every time they try to teleport a qubit. So every single version of the experiment. And that's the most analogous thing I can think of to the randomizing the phase of the laser. So the question is, can you do this under those conditions? Well, obviously, Alice and Bob are going to have to agree on a basis before they start, or this thing's never going to work. But if they do, then it'll work fine, because they just share an APR pair that their bases have been reconciled somehow, and they can teleport a state inside. But for DOR, this measurement, the EPR pair and the quality rotation that Bob does all have to be in the same basis as each other. Now, the strange thing is that to Victor, Alice and Bob have no entanglement. Or maybe they do. Because let's consider this EPR pair, which even though Alice and Bob have agreed on a basis, has a random basis relative to Victor. So the density matrix of this EPR pair, from Victor's point of view, is that it's an integral over all unitary operations over the projector of the EPR pair. Now it depends on which EPR pair you're talking about. If I use a psi minus, which is symmetric, then this integral does nothing, because it's symmetric under U tensor U, and they have a pure entanglement state. On the other hand, if they use one of the triplets, which isn't symmetric, then the integral comes out to a third of each of the triplets. And that is a product mixed state, or it's a separable mixed state, which has no entanglement. And so it's a little mysterious why they can use this to do teleportation. And the answer always lies in, figure out what Victor thinks. Alice and Bob figure out that they teleported correctly in their basis. And then you apply the partition ensemble fallacy to, and you figure out that everything was fine all along. But it's very confusing to think about. And it's not helped by the fact that the singlet is symmetric and it appears to work using one of the kinds of EPR pairs, because you get off the track of trying to understand what's really going on. That I think is also happening in the coherent state lasers, well, all lasers in coherent states, the continuous variable teleportation. Finally, I have a sort of a challenge. If I can find my piece of paper I put aside early on. It's sort of a homework assignment. Can I do it on time? Any? This is somebody else's talk.
You said for me to do
this. All right. Well, I don't need to take any questions at the end. Huh? Nobody wants to. All right, well, remember my two kinds of basis agreement, the kind where there's a unitary operation between them, but they have the same basis. And the other kind where, there we go. So there's this kind of basis agreement, and the unknown U kind of basis agreement, the so-called Speckens-Jassin alignment. Now what's interesting is that because of the things that I've learned and during this conference, it turns out that with either kind of basis agreement, without even bothering to actually rectify the bases to align them, Alice can transmit an unknown quantum state to Bob and give it back to Victor in such a way that will satisfy Victor that the state has been undisturbed in his basis. So the way you do that with this kind of basis alignment is you use the channel twice, and Alice maps the psi into the symmetric subspace or antisymmetric subspace, the same superposition, because U tensor U is happening on two uses of the channel. Bob maps it back, and they can restore the state back to Victor with the now lost other kind. And I got to start using a computer for these things. Well, with the other kind of a basis alignment, the point was their basis was exactly the same. No unitary channel happened in between, so the way they perform this task is they do nothing. So my homework question is, what if they have both kinds of basis misalignment? Their bases are tilted and there's a U in between. This is a situation where I believe it's impossible for them to perform this task of giving Victor back a perfect state. On the other hand, it might be possible if they're given an additional resource, namely a couple of EPR pairs in the real unadulterated basis, as well as a couple of EPR pairs that they could make themselves by sending them through the channel. And by using the symmetric subspaces of both of these types of objects, it may be possible to do a teleportation that satisfies Victor with this additional resource. And this is a sort of an open question that would be fun to solve while we're here. and might have a wonderful name like a supersymmetric subspace. So that's really all I have, except for sort of my big summing up, big ideas. So my guiding principle in thinking about these things is always Landauer's idea that information is physical. I was going to write Landauer's principle, but that means something else. So I don't know what to put in there. Landauer's insight. Finally, Howard, in his paper, mentioned this great term, the partition ensemble truth, but then didn't go anywhere with it and said, we're not going to do that. But to me, actually, he was onto something. You know, this partition ensemble fallacy type 2, and thinking about these things carefully, means that you're free to always act as if there's a universal frame, whether or not there is one. And furthermore, you're free to treat all states as relative to any basis that you want, which is, of course, precisely what people always do. You take your own basis and define states relative to it. And you can either look at this as an extremely deep reason that quantum mechanics is basis independent, or as completely trivial and obvious. And you can really take your pick. And finally, the idea that I've gotten out of this conference is that reference frames, or physical systems representing them, may be part of the missing link between quantum information theory, which is really just a branch of mathematics, and physics, which is a branch of physics. And for me, so that's sort of my big idea for the conference, and that's all I have. Hello.
I'm not very sure I understood at the end whether you think that there is a difference or not between continuous level teleportation and qubit teleportation.
I think there is not a difference. They both share the same sets of problems. But there are some subtle things that act to obscure that when you try to write down exactly why they have these problems.
So you would agree that actually all this controversy for continuous levels could also be raised for discrete
trials? Yes, I agree. Well, there's some interesting complexities, because one of the things that hides what's going on is that in the continuous variable case, we're trying different phases. Part of the reason that this all turns into a problem is you say, well, you didn't test it in the number state phase.